Welcome to episode 68 of Two Larrys and a Mike. I'm Larry Doughty.
Larry Bly over here. How you doing there, Larry?
I'm doing wonderful, and Mike is... Mike?
Oh, this doesn't sound good.
What?
Well, it seems that Mike has started a tasting room. Nothing he makes or produces. He just wants anyone to show up with anything they can, and he tastes it. Sounds like he's been trying out some of the hooch that's been brought over, I would say. Yeah, well, that's weird. Yeah,
does he need some peanut butter? That usually, sure, you know, takes care of the hiccups.
No, we need a large bag to put over his head. Remember when you were a kid and you had
a
the
paper
hiccups?
Bag?
A paper
okay.
bag. Remember that?
Yeah. Breathe in.
Let's do that. I was a little forgetful, so one time Tootsie made me do that, and she didn't tell me to take it off, and I went to school with it. I kept bumping into things. What's wrong with this child?
I don't know. Hey, you survived Prime Day. Congratulations.
Did what?
Prime Day.
What's Prime?
Amazon Prime Day.
Oh, I'm sorry. I must have missed it. I must have been somewhere else.
Well, wait a week or two. You'll see how much you missed.
Well, that's the way it goes. And I'll tell you what makes me think that we should appreciate them more than ever. I've been looking for a special pan. A special pan.
Special pan?
After all these years of all the pans, Cathlon and everything I got, I finally decided I need a special pan to do steaks on top of my stove when it rains outside.
Oh,
one of those with ridges on them, those real heavy-duty ones. Because when I got rid of my, I didn't want to, but I had to get rid of my Gen Air because, well, it just totally
stopped working. Yeah.
But it had something on it my brand new $4,000 expensive KitchenAid does not have.
Oh?
It had a grill, which I loved and I used a lot.
Okay.
So now I'm sort of stuck with a stove with no grill on top. And I thought, well, there's an easy answer to this. Well, so I went to this kitchen store here in town.
Yeah.
She said, oh, what? I said, she said, we have throwaway ones. I said, no. They apparently specialize in catering people.
Okay.
She said, but I tell you where you can get a good one.
Oh.
Lowe's. They're almost like the Amazon of everything, aren't they?
Lowe's. Well, that's true. If you can find it.
And I'm going to tell you
In the store.
I'm going to tell you something.
Okay.
I am not going to Lowe's. For a fine pan. I am not going. Sorry, I just got off on that. It happened yesterday evening. Well, I saw that Williams-Sonoma is still in business. I didn't know that. They're all online, and that's where I bought all my Cathlon from. So maybe I'll try that.
What could go wrong there?
No, I don't know.
The podcast that we're doing today.
Yeah, what are we doing, Larry?
5 minutes ago. Here in episode 68, we're going to be doing the 29 bands that have been together for more than 40 years. Mm. So we'll get to that in just a few minutes. A couple of music notes. Sort of like that.
Can I do that? Can I get by with that?
Yeah, absolutely.
That wasn't an actual note, you know. Sort of a half note.
After 5 years and 330 shows, Elton John is finally bidding farewell to touring. He wrapped up his farewell Yellow Brick Road tour in Stockholm, Sweden on Saturday, July 8th. According to the BBC, during the show, Elton told the audience, "It's been my lifeblood to play for you guys, and you've been absolutely magnificent." The tour actually kicked off in 2018, delayed for 2 years because of COVID in 2020, finally resumed in 2022. Now, you saw Elton.
I've seen Elton three times. Yeah, I have. He promised, you know, that he did start that, I think 4 or 5 years ago, he started this final tour.
Yeah.
As you say. And he said that after everyone stopped coughing, he would start this thing again. He'll probably, though, continue to do studio work and may even be heard humming in the shower on occasion.
That'll be okay.
Last tour took in over $600 million.
Isn't that amazing?
So chances are he won't have to busk on the streets of Atlanta anytime soon.
Get this, over 6 million people saw this final show.
Six million.
And the Eagles announcing.
And if one more person said that the sun has gone down on Elton's last tour, I was going to kill myself.
I get it. I really do. Eagles announcing they're doing their last tour.
Oh, no.
Over 50 years of touring. The long goodbye tour with special guest Steely Dan begins September 7th in New York City. Looks like our closest stops to the Star City, Charlotte, November 7th, and Raleigh on November 9th. Can you imagine what those tickets are going to cost?
$600 a piece, and that's just the nosebleed ones.
That's
the real
true.
One. It'll cost upwards of $2,000 a piece. I'll bet you.
I bet you're right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bet
yeah.
you by golly, wow. Well, that's another song.
They didn't do that, did they?
No, they didn't do that.
Okay.
No, they didn't do that.
Ready for some birthdays?
Yeah.
Happy birthday wishes to Deborah Harry of Blondie. Turned 78 on July 1st.
Now, that just doesn't seem possible,
no,
does it?
No, it doesn't. It really doesn't. Huey Lewis, 73
what
on
about
July
the news?
5th. They're still lagging along. They're still looking for work, to tell you the truth. July 7th, Doc Severinsen of The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. Now, this is hard to believe. 96.
And he just stopped performing last year, if you can imagine that.
What if he still has his coats, his outfits?
Coats of many colors. Yes. Ringo Starr, by the way, is 83. Did you know that?
That's
amazing.
Well, what McCartney's 81, I believe.
I think so.
Yeah, so they're doing well. Here's another shocker. July 8th, Steve Lawrence, 88.
Go away, little girl. Mm-hmm. He had the original version of that, by the way, and I loved it.
Yes, he did.
Kevin Bacon, 65. Are you related to Kevin Bacon? Are we all one generation off from Kevin Bacon? What is that thing, everybody? Well, I don't know. Anyway. Mavis Staples, 84, still got a great voice.
Yes.
Folk singer Arlo Guthrie, 76, man on the whole, had one hit record and has made an entire career of it.
Yeah, that's true. What did he do? City of New Orleans?
No, I'm wrong. He did The City of New Orleans and Alice's Restaurant.
That's right.
So he had two big hits.
I forgot
one of
the bigger
ones.
But
they were really big.
Yeah. Rapper Lil' Kim, you were listening to that?
Just a few minutes ago.
Okay.
I was done.
Lil' Kim is
49.
Yes, she is. And Cheech Marin of Cheech and Chong fame. 77.
You know, Cheech is more successful of the two. I mean, he's collects
true.
All this art. He has a museum of his own now.
He's
very successful.
You ready for some musical history makers?
No, I don't think
before
so.
Before we get to our podcast system?
No, I don't think so.
Greg Allman married Cher on July 30th, 1975.
How'd that work out?
And they said it wouldn't last.
How'd that work out? July 67, the Beatles started a 15-week run at number one on the U.S. album chart with, guess what? Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
Yeah.
Still a great album.
July of 1979, Sony introduced this thing called the Walkman. Everybody had to have one.
I got one out in my collection out in the hallway. Here I have old radios and tape recorders, and I got one of them there, too.
So do you think your Walkman is worth more than $200 now?
I hope not. If I did, I'd go out and sell it on the street right now.
Let's see. July 1956, Elvis recorded a song called Hound Dog.
Single sold over 10 million copies globally. And by the way, it wasn't written for him at all. It was written for by Lieber and Stoller for Big Mama Thornton, I believe.
Yeah. Jim Morrison found dead in a bathtub in Paris, France.
Oh, no, I didn't even know he was sick.
The cause of the death? A heart attack.
Yeah, we believe
that. What a musical loss. That was July 3rd,
1971. That was terrible. July 54, Elvis Presley had his first commercial recording session. And he's saying, "That's All Right, Mama," and Blue Room Moon of Kentucky.
Yeah, another Elvis note from 1954. Just a couple of days later, he made his radio debut when Memphis, Tennessee station WHBQ played "That's All Right."
If you go to the Sun Recording Studio Museum upstairs, they have actually the control room of WHBQ. They found it. They put it back together.
Wow.
It's behind glass. You can see it.
Is it a working board?
No. Although the studio downstairs is a working studio.
Oh, okay.
Having said that.
Yes.
It's a working studio in that you can actually record there.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually rent the space and all the equipment. And you can bring your own equipment, too.
Right.
But they don't use the old master control room because that's historic. What they do is they snake all of the wires and cables out into the alley into a gigantic truck with state-of-the-art equipment.
Yeah.
So you can say you recorded at Sun, but you're really recording on really nice.
I think that they did the same thing in Muscle Shoals, too.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. And one more note from 1985, Live Aid, an international rock concert in London, Philly, Moscow, Sydney was held to raise money for Africa's starving people. That was just a huge, huge event.
Oh, by the way, we have a complaint.
Just one?
Yeah, we have a complaint from a viewer here.
A woman that called in earlier ecology.
No, wait.
I'm so sick of that. Save the trees. What are you going to build your house out of? Meat?
I just found out the other day. I find the strangest things in my file from there.
You know, the workers you have come in here to the studio just amaze me.
Thank you.
All right. Our 29 bands that have been together for more than 40 years.
Huh.
You found this on ultimateclassicrock.com, and it's very fascinating. You know, some of them I was a little surprised at. I don't think anybody could say they were surprised by the fact that the Rolling Stones, formed in 1962, still going strong today.
Mm-hmm. Despite personnel changes, internal friction, and the loss of Charlie Watts.
Yeah.
Which was terrible.
Yeah.
Status Quo, I would never have thought of them. They were formed in 62, but I don't think they had their first hit until 69, I think it was. Yeah, the first chart, Pictures of Matchstick Men. But as far as I know, that I don't remember anything else he ever did.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Funny, we would mention Live Aid because they announced a breakup in 84, but returned to the stage for Live Aid the following year.
Oh, my. So, that's terrible. That was awful. I mean, that's good. The Scorpions. Do you know anything about the Scorpions?
Not a darn
thing. You want to stay away from them. They got real bad stingers.
They do. But they formed in 1965. They had Beatles and Scorpions going on at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Miller Band. Now, I did not realize they formed in 66.
I didn't either. Did you know that Steve Miller's godfather was Les Paul?
So no, I didn't know
that. No surprise that he started playing in his first band at the age of 12. Can you believe that? He formed the titular, pardon me for saying Steve Miller Band in 1966, the titular band, and enjoyed major success over the next several titular decades, scoring numerous platinum albums and number 10, top 10 hits, okay? Through it all, the band leader has maintained an ironclad work ethic and has never been afraid to speak his mind, including to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. When he got up, he told them what he thought of them. He's not a very nice man. I'm sorry. Steve Miller is not a nice man.
Carlos Santana. Mm-hmm. You know, the group Santana formed in 66. Early days of San Francisco found him forming that first band, which would be christened the Santana Blues Band, just in time for the first major gig at Fillmore. Carlos Santana has basically done everything with his career that he wanted to do. And if I'm not mistaken, they wanted Carlos Santana to do Woodstock, but he didn't have any music. He didn't have any album out at the time.
Not the only one. I mean, several other people appeared there too.
Mm-hmm.
Who weren't really prepared to be there, but they didn't have many hits. Melanie was one of them.
Well, that's true.
And yet she went out and just wowed the audience for 30 minutes. They said, Phil. She had one song.
Yeah.
I guess she sang it a lot.
Yeah.
A long time.
All right. REO Speedwagon. I was not aware they formed in 1966. Keyboardist Neil Dowdy, and he was an electrical engineering student.
In relation to you?
None whatsoever. The name's spelled totally different.
Oh, okay.
But he was an engineering student. When he bumped into drummer Alan Gratzer, the two jammed. They found an instant connection. It's almost like the instant connection that Don Henley and Glenn Frey had with the Stone Ponies.
Hmm.
You know, they were just brought in with Linda Ronstadt to be part of the group. When they'd be on the road, they would share a room together, and they got to know each other and play and jam, and well, the rest of his
history. Wore each other's clothes. Blue Oyster Cult was formed in 67. I didn't know that either. The Stairway to the Stars, long journey for Blue Oyster Cult.
Mm-hmm.
A group had adopted its now familiar name, the classic lineup anchored by Eric Bloom and Buck Dharma.
Chicago. Not a surprise.
What can we say about Chicago?
Yeah, they formed in 1967. They got a long history. They formed as The Big Thing, and that morphed into Chicago Transit Authority a year later.
Until the Transit Authority threatened to sue them for using their name.
Yeah, that might not have been the smartest thing on the part of the CTA, but hey, they probably would have somewhere along the line just been known as Chicago.
Well, PG&E did the same thing. Pacific Gas and Electric.
Yeah,
they did stupid thing.
Yep.
and they were told to cease and desist, I believe. Mm-hmm. Nazareth, can you believe them, 68?
Nope.
Don't know much about them. Scottish rockers. Honor the legacy, pushing forward with vocalist Carl, the raspy vocals of the late Dan McCafferty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Judas Priest. Oh, I'm sorry. I just got excited. Formed in 69, initially coming together in 69 with vocalist Al Atkins at the helm.
How about that little old band from Texas?
ZZ Top. Boy.
Mm-hmm.
There's only one Z now.
Yeah. Billy Gibbons, singer-guitarist, drummer Frank Beard, bassist, vocalist Dusty Hill. From 1969 through Hill's death in 2021, they were just a great band.
Still are.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. Have you ever seen the documentary on them?
No, I have not.
It's fascinating.
Okay.
I thought,
gotta do it.
Why do I want to watch a docu on ZZ Top? It really is terrific. I mean, there's something. Uriah Heep, remember them from 69?
Yeah.
Released more than 20 albums across their lengthy tenure. Guitarist Mick Bucks is the lone remaining original member.
Aerosmith, forming in 1970, more than 50 years on the stage after forming a rock and roll miracle, so to speak. Guitarist Joe Perry told Classic Rock magazine, "It's amazing that we made it through those first 2 years. Drug addictions, band turmoil came to a head in the early 80s, but despite a few flare-ups and lineup changes along the way, Aerosmith, are they still around today? I think they are.
Yeah, they're still around. How about America? I know that's one of our favorite groups. Formed in 1970. Mm-hmm. Boy, well, are they terrific. Mm. Horse with No Name was their first big hit. Band's commercial success dwindled shortly after Peak left in 77, but the rest have continued to tour diligently. Peak left because he became very religious and didn't want to be involved in the music scene anymore.
Hmm.
Molly Hatchet, I know you and I always crank up the hatchet.
Well, flirting with disaster. I'm all about that.
Molly Hatchet. I don't think I ever played a Molly Hatchet song in my life.
Yeah. Flirting with Disaster, just a popular song on K92. Love to play it, but being a morning guy, I didn't get to play it much.
Yes.
Because it was more of the afternoon night.
What'd they call that thing? They had a name for
day
that.
Parting.
Day parting, yeah, day parting. I jumped on a radio station and WEPN, I think it was EFN or whatever it is, in Martinsburg, West Virginia. Uh-huh. Called him up one morning. I was up and up there to call on a client.
Yeah.
I'm listening to him, uh-huh. And they played Highway to Hell at like 9:30 in the morning. I called him up and said, "Have you people ever heard of day parting? Who wants to hear Highway to Hell at 9:30 in the morning? What is wrong with you people?"
Kiss. First came together in 1973, but the roots of the New York group started 2 years earlier. Gene Simmons, Paul Stanley forming the band Wicked Lester. See, it just didn't have the same ring to it as Kiss. They rocked the house for quite a while.
You know what an Iron Maiden is, don't you? Well, it also was a group. Formed in 75. That's enough about them. U2. U2, still around from their early days as a scrappy pub band to their eventual status as stadium headliners, U2 has maintained an all for one and one for all mentality. Irish rockers that have kept the same four-piece lineup all these years, well, most of them, since forming in 76, and they've since become one of the genre's biggest selling and most celebrated bands. Very talented.
You know, when we talk of the bands that had staying power, we cannot leave out Rick Nielsen and Cheap Trick. They formed in 73. Foreigner, forming in 1976, led by the duo of Lou Gramm and Mick Jones. I still love just about anything Foreigner does. You ever bumped into a Def Leppard?
No.
I don't think it'd be a good idea.
Most of them can hear pretty good that I've talked to.
Def Leppard, they formed in 1976. And man, you talk about a group that could to rock the house. Were you ever a Duran Duran fan?
No.
I guess it was more of a pop sound.
I mean, they had a couple of singles that I played on the radio, and I didn't mind them too badly, but it just wasn't my cup of tea.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite, well, of course, Hungry Like a Wolf. I always liked the song Reflex. I do not know why, but yeah. Simon Le Bon was just awesome with them.
The Cure, which I know nothing about.
Uh-huh.
strong for more than four decades. They're still together, believe it or not.
Wow.
Yeah.
Depeche Mode, they formed in 1980. Are they still around? One of the members died. Andy Fletcher.
Fletcher, yeah.
He died in 2002. I couldn't tell you a thing about Anthrax. Anthrax, the group.
I just know you need to stay away
yeah,
from
Yeah, you do want to stay away from that.
Very, very dangerous.
But they formed in 1981. Metallica. Actually, Metallica has, even though they're a hard rock band, they have really done some wonderful things for communities and their fans over the years.
Mm-hmm. Red Hot Chili Peppers, love them. Formed in 82.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like to go on stage wearing only their socks. Well, not always. What? Once in a while, that's true. It's not always true. But they are really terrific like that. And by the way, they've sold more than 120 million albums worldwide.
Wow. Bon Jovi, they formed in 1983. I don't think there's anything I can say about Bon Jovi that hasn't been said, except for the fact that Richie Sambora, he can play a guitar. And I think that happened early 80s. Of course, Bon Jovi, John Bon Jovi and the group, part of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They were inducted in 2018. And Poison from 1983. That's when they got their start. They actually formed under the name Paris in Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania. Bret Michaels and Poison definitely making a name for themselves. So there you go. I mean, we just touched on...
I thought of one that wasn't on the list.
Oh?
Ozzy Osbourne. What's his group's name? Ozzy Osbourne and the Osbournes. Anyway...
Black Sabbath?
They're still together, but right now they're taking a little sabbatical because Ozzy's having, well, a little problem wobbling around.
Yeah, yeah.
So he claims he's still going to get back on stage, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just not so sure.
Well, Ozzy's done some crazy stuff on stage, but he's good.
Well, he will live to bite the head off something else again on stage.
Well, possibly so. I don't want to see it, but yeah, possibly so. So there you go. 29 bands that have been together more than 40 years. If you want to read more about some of these bands, UltimateClassicRock.com is where we found that.
You ready for a pop quiz?
I'm ready.
Right.
Pop away.
Time for a pop quiz, ladies and gentlemen. There we go.
No.
Who wrote and first performed? That's enough of the popping, ladies and gentlemen. The popping people are popping me off. Who wrote and first performed the highly popular Christmas song, Last Christmas, I Gave You My Heart?
Who did it? Wham!
Who wrote it?
Oh, who wrote it?
Who wrote it?
I would think
and first
Andrew
performed
Ridgely
it?
And George Michael.
Actually, it was George Michael by himself.
Really?
Yes.
Andrew was out shopping for Christmas.
There's a great documentary on called Wham on Netflix, and they talk about it. George Michael wrote the song in 84, recorded it soon thereafter. It became top-rated in England, but was kept from the number one slot in America by another Christmas song, Do They Know It's Christmas? Which, by the way, he sang on, too. A major fundraiser on which George Michael also sang, and both songs were given over to nonprofits.
Wow.
So he never made a dime on either of them. And you got to wonder, when it came back out many years later, Last Christmas would outlive George Michael's, becoming number one in 2021 for the first of several times, and for several other artists, including Ariana Grande, Mariah Carey, and Taylor Swift. And I got to wonder who made the money on that, because he had given away the rights to a nonprofit. So I don't know what had happened with that. It'd be interesting to look that up, okay?
That is
interesting.
Oh,
I think I have, there's another pop quiz. We're just popping off with pop quizzes, ladies and gentlemen. This has nothing to do with anything, Larry. I just felt we needed a little blessed relief. That's enough. Stop it. Stop it. Just stop it. This has to do with another rock star who doesn't enjoy, he's a cook.
Oh?
Well, yeah, we're talking, what's his name? Donner's Dives.
Oh, Guy Fieri.
Guy Fieri. Besides eggs, what food does he despise?
I have no idea.
Beef liver. I had guessed chocolate-covered grasshoppers or pineapple pizzas. Those were the one I would guess. He says, I can't do it. Beef, I just can't do it. He says, it's the minerality of it. I want to like it. I really do. I'm a cook, and I want to like everything, but I just can't. even when I smell it cooking, it's too much for me. Of course, the other thing is eggs. He hates eggs because he was attacked by a peepee when he was young or something. I don't know. Anyway, that's our pop quiz.
Had no idea.
That's true. You
don't All right. We got some obits to get to.
Dick Biondi. Very few people listening to this will know who Dick Biondi is. He died at the age of 90, not so long ago, but he was one of America's great top disc jockeys in his day. His day lasting many, many decades. He worked at LS in Chicago two or three times. WKBW in Buffalo, another 50,000-watt radio station back in 63. He is a member of the Radio Hall of Fame, of which there must be a Hall of Fame for everything. You know why he worked at so many stations?
Couldn't keep a job?
No, he kept getting fired. And you know why he kept getting fired?
Why?
Because he would make fun of management. He would say, I hate my manager, and by the way, he's driving a green so-and-so right now, and if you go out and throw rocks at him, he did that one time, I would appreciate it. Throw rocks at him. Needless to say, the guy turned around and came back and fired Biondi on the spot. In 1973, I think it was, or 74, I'm working middays at ROV.
Yeah.
And the hotline rings because all the other lines were busy. There were like three business lines were lit up and two request lines were blinking. So when that happened, the hotline rang during the day, you had to answer it.
Right.
At a night, you know, of course, at night you always had to answer it because it meant someone was going to call you up and chew you out in management. So anyway, I answered it, and guess who was on the other line?
Who?
Dick Biondi.
No way.
He was working at a little radio station in North Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, where he worked, by the way, for about 4 or 5 years.
Oh, my.
So we chatted a lot. I said, well, you know, I can't get you through. He wanted to talk to Bert Levine, the owner. And I said, well, I can't get you through to him right now. He's on another line. So we chatted a little bit. It was nice to talk to him. He's a nice guy. And then finally, I said, well, here's Bert, and put him online. I was never told why he called, but I have a sneaky hunch. Bert and his family always went to the beaches in the summer because I would run into them at the beaches. I have a funny feeling Bert went down there and heard Biondi on the air at North Myrtle Beach and said, well, if he could work here, I could afford him at ROV in Roanoke. And I'll bet he made him an offer. However,
he may have.
Here's my other theory.
What?
If you're not going to make any money, you'd be better off doing it at the beach than in Roanoke, Virginia. Don't you
now,
think?
Now, I have to admit that I walked away from a job at Myrtle Beach because they were going to pay me in sunshine.
Yeah.
And, you know, the sunshine will only pay so many electric bills. So, and I really didn't want to work like 7 to midnight or something like that.
Even you got even a death over there, right? So,
I do. Former rhythm guitarist George Thickener has passed away at the age of 77. He helped co-find the band Journey and also appeared on their first three albums.
Yeah.
So
great loss there. And finally, Grammy-winning pianist of all people, Peter Nero has passed away. Peter Nero is a Grammy-winning pianist who interpreted pop songs through classical and jazz forms and served, by the way, as the Philly Pops conductor for more than three decades. He died at the age of 89. Nero earned Grammy Awards in 61 for Best New Artist and in 62 for the Best Performance by an Orchestra or Instrumentalist for his record, The Colorful Peter Nero. So anyway, he was quite the musician. He really was.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he is. Oh, by the way, a lot of people out there would like to be able to talk fluently we could here on microphones.
So, so don't delay. Send your check today and get in on the high-paying action as a famous radio personality. And remember our slogan, if it weren't for your mouth, you'd be talking out of your nose.
Is there a news flash for this podcast?
Yes, Larry. I thought you'd never ask. Good heavens. Sometimes it just takes you so long to get around to asking. You have no idea what we've gone through in the studio today, ladies and gentlemen. Everything but the yard man showing up with a blower outside, which I'm certain is going to happen momentarily.
Don't throw the idea out there.
Here's the big news flash. 5 years after her death, the final wishes of music superstar Aretha Franklin are still unsettled. Well, that's good. I've got an update on that, too. And an unusual trial that began Monday a week ago determined which of two handwritten wills, including one found in the couch cushion, actually there were two found in the couch, will guide how her estate is handled. The Queen of Soul, who had four sons, did not have a formal typewritten will in place, despite years of health problems and efforts by her attorneys to get one done. But under Michigan law, now this is interesting, it's still possible to treat other documents with scribbles and scratch-outs and hard-to-read passages as her commands. And in fact, it took a jury less than an hour the other day to determine that the last handwritten will, which was found in the couch, would be the final and approved will, even though it was signed with a smiley face. You can't make this stuff up.
What?
So the one brother got the house valued at over $1 million, but the two other brothers got the gold, baby. Publishing and writers and artist rights worth who knows how much. And by the way, the IRS, oh, I wanted to read this to you too. Overall assets were pegged at $4.5 million, mostly cash, which she was always paid cash. Did you know that?
No, I was not aware of that.
She insisted before she went on stage, I want my money. I want it now. I want it in cash. And she put it in her purse. This is a true story, which she would carry on stage and sit beside the piano. This is true. You can't make this up.
Good for you, Ray.
Though Franklin's creative works and intellectual property were undervalued with just a nominal dollar figure, which they're saying is probably worth $30 or $40 million, who knows, the estate since 2020 has paid at least, are you ready for this? $8.5 million to the Internal Revenue Service, which had a claim for taxes after the singer's death. Court filings show the IRS claims took priority, of course. The estate wasn't going anywhere until the IRS got paid off. Isn't that something?
Wow.
So not only did she get paid in cash, she didn't pay the IRS either.
So a lot of people listening to this podcast will probably be checking their sofa cushions to see if there are any...
Not so fast. Most attorneys say, here's what you need for a will.
Okay.
It needs to be dated, it needs to be signed, and you need to take it to a bank and have it, what do they call it?
Notarized.
Notarized.
Yeah.
You have those three things. You can do it yourself. Don't need a lawyer, and that's okay. In most states, that will suffice. In Michigan, however, if you want to poke something scribbled down in your couch, you can do that. And I imagine under your bed, too, if you wanted to.
I think I'd stay away from the smiley face. That's maybe pushing it a little too far.
I thought that was the... That was the icing on the cake.
Smiley face.
Smiley face.
Well, I guess she got her respect after all, didn't she?
All right, let's do the Beyond the Tracks.
Let's do it. This time, Beyond the Tracks, Charlie Watts, the late drummer of the Rolling Stones, he just came out with an anthology album. That was on June 30th. And Charlie Watts, considered to be, by many, one of the greatest drummers ever. And he's our featured artist in this installment of Beyond the Tracks. And here, I hope, five things you may not have known about Charlie. By the way, the anthology album, it's all jazz.
That doesn't surprise me. He was a big jazz artist.
Oh, yeah, he was.
Artist.
He was. Charles Robert Watts was drummer for the Stones from 1963 until his death in 2021. He, Jagger, Richards were the only members of the band to perform on every one of their studio albums. Mm. Charlie Watts originally trained to be a graphic artist, but developed an interest in jazz and drumming. At the age of 13, his parents gave him his first drum kit in 1955.
Good heavens, that's something.
Yeah.
He met Jagger, Richards, and Brian Jones, by the way, while playing drums at a rhythm and blues club in London in early 1963. Mm-hmm. He'd also toured with his own group called the Charlie Watts Quintet.
Yep. After joining the Stones as their drummer, thanks to his early graphic artist work, he designed their record sleeves and tour stages.
Man, what a talent he was.
Yeah, really.
All around.
Wasn't just a good drummer.
All around good guy.
And in July of 2006, Modern Drummer magazine voted him into the Drummer Hall of Fame, joining Ringo Starr, Keith Moon, Steve Gadd, Buddy Rich, and other drummers from rock and jazz. So some interesting things there about Charlie Watts. Shall we wrap it up before the lawn guy comes back?
Yeah, thank you. We lucked out on that one, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
He just mowed the yard, and he said, I'll be back in a little bit. My blower's not working.
I hate it when that happens.
It's awful. Just terrible.
Hey, thank you for listening to episode 68 of Two Larrys and a Mic. If you like this episode, hit the subscribe button so you'll be notified of new episodes. And you can find Two Larrys and a Mic wherever you get your podcasts. And we hope you're going to share the podcast with someone. Just click on the share button. See you next time. time for Two Larrys and a Mike. I'm Larry Doughty.
Larry Bly here. And Mike is still at the tasting room. I think he's tasted too much. He's getting ready to fall over with a hiccup.
Peanut butter.